because of the fear of the Lord, I'm here tonight. And I don't know how it is with other ministers, but whenever the Lord gives me a message, he preaches it to me, and he preaches it to me, and he preaches it to me. And it's on your mind, and on your mind, and on your mind, on my mind, until I release that message. And once that message is released, then I feel a relief from the Lord. And I think that'll help my nerves tonight to get this message out, because this one's been preached to me many times, and I've given part of it to others, and it's been a blessing to them. But the fear of the Lord is a very important factor in our life. And we'll find that passage a lot in Proverbs. Proverbs 1 and 7 says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction." Now, I'd like to talk just a moment about fear, the definition. It's an emotion when it's used as a noun. And the definition, they said, was an unpleasant emotion by belief that someone or something is dangerous, likely to cause pain or threat. Now, that's one definition of fear. As a verb, it can be afraid of someone or something, but fear is also a mixed feeling of reverence, the fear and love of God, a regard with reverence and awe and respect. I was thinking of regards to how fear cautions us in many ways. For instance, you know, a little child, they don't know, they'll play in the street. They would pick up a rattlesnake. They don't have that respect or fear because it's not been taught to them. But fear, when you know what danger is, it will cause you to pull back. You know, whenever you teach a child, you don't touch something hot, or if that child ever touches something hot, usually it's a pretty good reminder, if it's hot, don't touch it. So there's things that we need to respect and have fear over, just in general. And then the fear and respect toward God is very important, and it begins when children are young. A child learns from their parents. And I was thinking back whenever I was a child, and all children go through this. I started coming to church. I probably went to church when I was a newborn baby. That was probably the first place I went. And I'm sure that when I was a little child, I did just like these little children. I probably made noise and cut up in church, and my parents probably had to take me out and discipline me. But I do remember when I was a child, and I was probably about 4 or 5, and we sat about the fourth bench from the front in the middle. And I remember that my parents wanted me to be quiet. I learned that. You know, well, a child will learn that, but how did they learn it? Because of perseverance of the parents. The parents kept teaching me. They kept disciplining me. And that's what we all do. But I remember sitting in church, and as a child, I was tempted to turn around and look back because there were young people back there that were sometimes doing things, and I wanted to see what they were doing, and my dad would go, "Turn back around." Now, there were 4 of us. My little brother sat on the end of the bench by Dad, and then Cindy sat in the middle, my little sister, and then my brother Don sat by my mom, and I kind of liked to get as far away from Mom and Dad as I could because I like to kind of do things like that. I remember that, but my parents disciplined me. And I got the idea one time, I've told this to the grandchildren, that I'd take a mirror, and then I wouldn't have to look back. And I would just look in the mirror and see what was going on. Well, I got in trouble for that, too. Come over here, and I'd sit down by my brother, and my mom would reach over, and you know what she would do? She would pinch my leg. And I wasn't supposed to holler. If you get 3 pinches, you would get a spanking when you got home. So we learned. And what I'm saying that is, discipline brings a respect and a reverence, and is very, very important. Whenever my grandma was young, they always said, whenever they would have a potluck dinner or they would have a dinner together on the grounds, they would say, children are to be seen, not heard, at the table. And then when I was a child, they'd say, the men go first at the table. You let the men go first. You start the food. At our house, the food was passed around the table, dad, and then around the table, right? But what is it today? You know, I'm just saying this in general. A lot of times, what? We serve the children. And there's sometimes a little slip like that I see in a general way in our society of losing a little respect toward elders and seniors. And we see that in our society in general, and things that happen in society slip in among us. And I know we hear a lot about God is love, and that's true. But we've kind of bought into the thinking also, I believe, that tolerance comes into factor there. And so because we love, we tolerate. We tolerate this, and we're supposed to tolerate that, and supposed to, and sometimes it becomes into a shady area where we don't, you know, we shouldn't really tolerate it. Love means stand against it. And we find God is that way. God is a God that hates sin. And he hates sin, the sins of this world and what it's taking place. And he wants his people to have that same hatred towards sin and the same respect toward him that he wanted the children of Israel to have. And we're going to talk about that in a minute. I want to talk a minute about knowledge. Because it says the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Knowledge can be subjective. And you think about it. Wherever you are born and raised, that is the environment that you learn your knowledge from. The definition of knowledge is facts and information and skills acquired by a person through experience or education. The theoretical or practical understanding of a subject, awareness or familiarity gained by experience of a fact or situation. Okay, we learn knowledge from others. We learn it from reading. We learn it from experience. We learn what people tell us. That's how we gain knowledge. And it can be subjective to where we are in our environment and who we are born, what family we're born into. And I'll bring it out in this way. When Dwayne used to take in men off of the street to work for him, he was in steel construction and our children were young. And we lived over on 2nd Street. And there was a creek and a railroad track. And Dwayne would get up in the morning some, and he'd walk down that railroad track and under the viaduct, the old viaduct, it's not there now, it's the old viaduct, that would cross over the Cottonwood Creek. There would sometimes be men that would sleep under there, men from the street, And Dwayne would go down and he'd say, I'll pay you for the day if you want to come and work for me. And so he would bring some of these guys to, sometimes three, but most of the time one or two, and I'd feed him breakfast and he'd take him to work. And so we, through that process, and then we bought the house next door, so sometimes they would stay in there. But anyway, through that process, we had one man that stayed with us quite a while, and he was from the carnival, and we had his brothers work for us too and his friends. But he was of the street, and he was street knowledgeable, and his background and environment was totally the opposite of mine. Mine was church and kindness and love, but not his. His background was one of the fist and grit, and that was the law. And what he told us, there's a lot of things that we had with him. He was with us for 4 or 5 years off and on. But anyway, you might remember him. His name was David. But one of the things he said that stayed with me was, he said, whoever people fear the most, that's the boss. Whoever, you don't, on the street, you don't let people know you're afraid of them, or they'll rule you, they'll control you. The fear, whoever is the most feared, that's the boss of the street. And so I thought of that many, many times, and you know, out in nature, the law of the wild, that is true. That is true. Whatever animal is feared the most, that is the one that's feared. That's the boss. That's the king of the jungle. You hear about the lion? But it's also that way in mankind when there's not any respect toward God. Whenever a person is on the street and they know somebody is dangerous, they're going to be afraid to be by that person. They're not going to want to you know, they don't trust that person. So there's a certain amount of fear toward that person, whether they're a good person or not. A lot of times on the street, it's a fear of being hurt and harmed that rules. When I worked at the Guthrie Job Corps, I remembered what David said. And I was there for 18 months, and I worked as a night dorm mom. And that was a very true thing to me. I found that out. Working with those young men that were off of the street, I didn't want them knowing I was ever afraid. I looked them in the eye, and I would tell them what I wanted them to do, and I'd say, thank you for doing it. And I know it was God. It was the Lord. But the Lord allowed me to be able to work there and keep the respect of those men. I know I had to be honest with them and keep my integrity. I never called them a bad word. They knew I would never cuss at them like some of the other dorm moms did. And they learned to like me. And that was some of the problem. The other dorm moms got jealous because the men liked me. And there were women there too. Sometimes I was with the women. But anyway, what I'm saying is, whenever you can gain respect, and integrity is a very important part of that, whenever a person is respectable and has integrity, then there is a certain amount of fear toward that person, as in regard to fear of respect toward them. That's important. It's a very important thing in our society to respect your elders. And I guess that's what I was trying to say earlier about our society today. There's a lot of lack of respect and fear toward the law, and some of it might be because there's not integrity there, and I agree with that. But yet there needs to be, to keep society intact, to keep people in their places, there needs to be a certain amount of fear and respect toward law and order. So it is. That's very important in our society, and it says that the fear of God is the beginning of knowledge. Now I was reading a little bit too about King Charles. Now the king, now I'll just briefly tell you about him. His life is completely different than you and mine. He lives in a place that's guarded. He has bodyguards that keep watch over him. I've never ever had to experience that. I've never had to have somebody watch me and go with me all the time to make sure nobody harms me, but that's his world. That's his life. And so his knowledge and his understanding of life would be a lot different than yours and mine. So knowledge, it comes from our environment and the people we are with. And the Lord wants us as his people to be able to reach out to others and share the gospel in such a way, because it reaches all brackets of class, so that we are able to be understanding. To me, the Bible says, a man that wins souls is what? Wise. Wisdom is the combination of knowledge and understanding. Knowledge, which is facts, learning, knowing about your environment, knowing about things around you, reading. Understanding comes from experience. Because I have gone through, let's say, the loss of a husband, I understand now more what it's like to be a widow. Okay? It's just understanding. There's more understanding about that. If you go through the loss, a car accident, and you have all the things to deal with on the financial part, and you understand them when somebody says, I was in a car accident, your mind goes, I understand how they feel. So understanding comes from experiences that we have in life. And the combination of those is wisdom. So I want to go a little bit into the life of Moses, just a little bit. And I know we all are familiar with how his birth was. His parents saw that he was a proper child, and they spared his life by putting him in a basket. And he was drawn out of that basket, from the Nile River as a baby. And the princess of Egypt saw him and had compassion on him. And she took him in to be her son. But she told Moses' mother, who was hired to be his nurse, I'm going to come and get him and take him in as my son when he's weaned. Now, there's a little controversy about what timing that was in his age. 3 years old was the normal weaning time of a child. By that time, they were weaned and pretty much potty trained, that kind of thing. So it could have been at 3, it could have been a little older, but anyway, Moses was taken in to be a prince. And yet he knew from his childhood, see, the beginning of knowledge, the beginning of wisdom, he knew that he was adopted. He knew his mother had enough window of time to train him and teach him, you are a Hebrew. You are an Israelite. You're not an Egyptian. And she must have taught him and his father too some biblical things, because it was not written down. These were people that were slaves. They were men that, and women that passed the word down by word of mouth. So it was not written down about the history of the Jews, or the, at that time, Israelites. It was passed down by word of mouth. So that mother and father taught that son in his early years the fear of God and about his family. And he was taken in as Pharaoh's grandson. And we don't have a lot of history about his life as a prince. We can imagine that he was trained, and I'm sure he was, educated, well-educated in the laws and schools of that time. He was probably trained in military style, because that was a common thing for a prince of that day. And we know that Moses, though, kept in his mind that he was not an Egyptian, and how that one time he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, and he looked all around, didn't see anyone, and we know how he slew that Egyptian and buried his body in the sand, thinking it was covered, but it wasn't. And the next day or two, whenever two Hebrews were fighting, and Moses went to separate, and they said, are you going to kill us like you did that Egyptian? And Moses then what? Had a great fear. He knew he had done wrong, and his sin was going to be found out, and he fled out into the wilderness. He had tried to take things into his own hands. It was not God's timing. But Moses went out into the wilderness, and there he found Jethro to work for. And let's go to Exodus. Let's see here. When Moses saw the burning bush. About Exodus, I believe it's the third chapter. Yes. Third chapter. Moses has been out in the wilderness taking care of sheep. No doubt, kind of a rough man looking, you know, scraggly maybe. And here he is taking care of these sheep, and he looks and there's a bush that's burning, but it's not being consumed. And the angel of the Lord, I'm in Exodus 3 and 2, and the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a flame of the fire out of the midst of the bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire, and the bush was not consumed. And Moses said, I will now turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush is not burnt. And when the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called unto him out of the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. And he said, here am I. And he said, draw not nigh hither, put off thy shoes from off thy feet, for the place whereon thou standest is holy ground. Respect me, Moses. Respect me. Take off your sandals. Don't just come near me. Respect me, Moses. I'm going to put some words into your mouth. I'm going to talk to you, Moses, that you must respect me. And Moses did as he was told. And he said, I am the Lord, the God of thy father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. I probably would hide my face too. But God had a special place for Moses, and he wanted Moses to have a fear of him, a respect toward him. And Moses did. And Moses told him, I can't talk. I'm not good in bringing my thoughts out. Whether he had a little stammering problem or whatever it was, he was not feeling able in himself. And God said, I'll have Aaron, your brother, help you. But he said, I want you to go and talk to Pharaoh and tell him to let my people go. I've heard their cries, their pleads for help, and I want them to be delivered. That was a big undertaking for Moses. He had to have more fear of God than of man. And that's really the central part of my message tonight. We must have more fear of God than fear of man. because Moses was going to go before the Pharaoh that perhaps he had grown up with. The Pharaoh that probably knew he'd killed that Egyptian or heard about it. And he could easily think, why, Lord? Why, God, do you want me to go before Pharaoh? He could have me executed. He could just say the word, and I could be gone. But God said, I'll be with you, and I'll handle it. I'll take care of it. You must trust me. And I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about how Moses and Aaron went before Pharaoh. We know the story. Pharaoh's heart was hardened, and there was the 12 plagues that came and caused all the things to happen to the Egyptians, but the Israelites were spared. And we know that the last one was the plague of the death angel, and it came beforehand. God had told Moses to tell the children of Israel to put the blood of the lamb on the doorpost. Now, by this time, I'm sure the children of Israel realized the fear of God and that God's hand was upon Moses, because they had seen all these plagues taking place. And so they were able then to fear Moses and that he was a good leader. He had God's hand upon him. And they did as they were told, and they put the blood of the lamb over on the doorpost, and they got out of Egypt. And we know the story, how Pharaoh, his heart was hardened again, and he came after them. But the Lord parted the Red Sea. They were able to go across on dry land. And just after they had reached over on the other shore of the Red Sea, the Egyptians were starting in with their chariots, and God allowed the waters to come back over and to destroy those that were following Moses. The children of Israel saw all this happen, and they were, I'm sure, humbled and praising God because they were spared being killed by the Egyptians, and they saw all these mighty things that God had done. But what did they do? They began to murmur. We don't have any food. Moses, you've just brought us out here to die. You know? And yet they had seen all these mighty miracles. And I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about their murmuring, but God was displeased with them because of their unbelief and their murmuring. They'd witnessed so many things. And yet they were still murmuring and complaining. Now, what were they afraid of? Well, every person wants to be fed. Everybody has to have water. Everybody wants to have shelter and protection. So they were afraid that those things were going to run out. And I'll tell you what, if we were in their same shoes, do you guys like eating beans and cornbread every day? When they were getting manna, every day manna came. And don't you know, maybe those little children would say, manna again? Do I have to eat it, Mama? You know, yes, that's all we've got. The Lord sent some quail, and they disobeyed about that and tried to keep some, and that was a curse to them. But, you know, you think about it, it wasn't the best situation. And they murmured about it and complained. Then God said, I've spared you from a bad situation, where you were being beaten and you had no land of your own and your children were taken from you and made into house servants, and there were things taken and done to you that was terrible, and you were crying about it, and I brought you out, and now you're complaining. But you're just afraid because you don't think my grace, my provision is big enough to take care of you. And if they had only thought, God, the one they were serving had made the whole universe. He had made everything. He owns the cattle on 1,000 hills. But they were complaining. And they were saying, I'm just afraid we are going to run out. I'm just afraid. And yet God supplied their needs. Then Moses went up on the mount. In Exodus, the 24th chapter, we have the story of Moses going up on the mountain. And the fear of the Lord was there where they saw the cloud. This is Exodus 24 and 15. And Moses went up into the mount, and a cloud covered the mount. And the glory of the Lord abode upon Mount Sinai, and the cloud covered it 6 days. And the seventh day he called unto Moses out of the midst of the cloud. Don't you know that was a fearful thing to hear your name being called out of that cloud? And the sight of the glory of the Lord was like devouring fire on the top of the mount in the eyes of the children of Israel. I would be afraid. I would be afraid. If I saw a mountain and there was fire on the top and, you know, the glory of the Lord, the fear, the shaking of the mountain, we would all be afraid. And Moses went up into the midst of the cloud and got him up into the mount. And Moses was in the mount 40 days and 40 nights. In the 25th chapter, and the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, that they bring me an offering of every man that giveth it willingly with his heart. Ye shall take my offering. And this is the offering that ye shall take of them, gold and silver and brass. And he goes on to begin to explain to Moses how he wants the tabernacle built. But he was telling Moses this in regards to the people of Israel, saying, this is to be done in reverence to me, in respect to me, that the people may not forget me and know I, the God of their fathers, the God that made the universe, is able to take care of them. But I want something from them. I want respect. I want offerings of love. I want them to know that I care, but I want to know they care. And what were the children of Israel doing while Moses was on the mount? Remember the story? They said to Aaron, we don't know what's happened to Moses. He's up there on the mountain, and we haven't heard from him. Here, we want to make a calf. We want to set this calf up like we saw the Egyptians do. We want to make it and bow to it. And not only was it just doing that, but there were sensual dances and things that went along with this worship that God was not pleased with. And so it was Aaron, he had more fear of what the people would do to him if he didn't listen than he had fear of God. And he had just seen all these things God had done. And yet, he feared the people and what they were wanting, that he was left in charge, and he allowed the people to put pressure on him. Peer pressure is very strong. The devil knows that. And evil people use peer pressure to cause others to bend and bow. Peer pressure has been a way of the devil's tactics for generations to cause people to lose out with God. Afraid of people more than afraid of God. And so it was, Aaron was that way. He yielded to the people, and we won't go into reading it all, but you can read it there in the, I think it's Exodus, tells Moses how to build the, okay, this 32nd chapter of Exodus, when they built the golden calf, and then Moses came down and he saw what the people had done. And Moses was grieved because he had been witnessing God's power and might and heard these commandments. And he came down on the 30th chapter of Exodus 32. And it came to pass on the morrow that Moses said unto the people, ye have sinned a great sin. And now I will go up unto the Lord, peradventure I shall make an atonement for your sins. And Moses returned unto the Lord and said, oh, this people have sinned a great sin and have made them gods of gold. Now, yet now, if thou wilt forgive their sin, and if not, blot me, I pray thee, out of thy book which thou hast written. And the Lord said unto Moses, whosoever hath sinned against me, him will I blot out of my book. Therefore now go, lead the people into the place of which I have spoken unto thee. Behold, mine angel shall go before thee. Nevertheless, in the day when I visit, I will visit their sin upon them. And the Lord plagued the people because they made the calf which Aaron made. There was punishment. We serve the same God today. A God that says, I hate sin. And if there's sin, and you tarry in it, and you don't respect me enough to get rid of that sin, there'll be punishment for it. It may not come immediately, but it will come. And so the children of Israel were punished, and Moses worked with them. Now Moses was an educated man. As I said, he was raised up in a palace. He had all the luxuries of a king or a prince would want. And so he had the knowledge of that, and he also had, you might say, from being a shepherd, the street knowledge because he had been out in the fields, and so he knew that type of life. He had that knowledge, and he also had the knowledge of writing books, and that's how we've got the first four books of the Bible. He was a man that knew how to write and read. The people he were leading, being slaves, they were not educated people. So God spoke to them in very strong, firm ways to catch their attention and to talk to them by sending the pillar of fire in the night and the cloud in the day, you know, and leading them. He spoke to them. Moses wrote the books of the Bible, the first five books. I'm sorry, the first five books. And that way we have knowledge of Genesis. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was, you know, we had those knowledges, and I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful that there was a man of God that the Lord could use, that he had the fear of God, and he put God first. And because of that, generations and generations since have been blessed. Now, I was thinking about Jesus. When Jesus came to this earth, he found conditions where people were in bad slavery to the devil. In Rome, it was very wicked of that time, a lot like our times today. The value of human life was very low. We're going now into the time of Christ when he came to this earth. The Old Testament, I've said it before, it points to Jesus. And the offerings, the blood offerings that they sacrificed for their sins, was a shadow or forerunner of Christ coming to be the supreme Lamb. And so it was when Jesus came, God chose the timing of his coming. When the world was knowledgeable in many ways, they were ever learning but never coming to the full knowledge of Christ. They were ever learning. The Greeks loved knowledge. They loved to study. They had philosophers. They had just a minute, I'll think of their names. Plato and Socrates and some of them, they were great philosophers, and they made great plays, and they were ever learning. And the Romans, they were people that loved strength. They were all about fortifying their territories and property, land, and owning and gaining and conquering. And they were, you know, they liked to have the gladiators' fights and things like that. And so, and then they had their gods that they named in the sky. And we get still some of our months and things from their names. But anyway, that's the time when Christ came to this earth the first time. And the people of that time had their own sets of governments and their own ways, but they did not have a fear of God, the true God. They were not respecting God, the creator of the heavens and the universe. And God wanted them to know that he cared, and he wanted them to know of him. And if you turn to John, it's the book of John, the first chapter, John tells us the word came, but the world received him not, because they loved darkness rather than light. That was the true light, which lighteth every man that cometh into the world. Let's see here. And he was not received. And the Word was made flesh, the 14th verse, and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. But the world loved darkness, and they were not ready to receive that light. Now, why did they love darkness more? Because their deeds were evil. But also because the fear of an unknown, and also the fear of, what will people think? What will people believe of me? You know, the Nicodemus that came in the night, he came in the night to Jesus, did he not? Why did he come in the night? Because he was of the Sanhedrin, and he did not want them to know he was seeking Jesus. See, that peer pressure of fear was there. And so it was when Jesus came into this world, he brought a light that shone brightly. And the people saw it. They saw the miracles that he did. They saw all the love that he showed to people. And yet, if we turn to the last bit of John, what did they do at the last? Now, how many people were there when Jesus stood there on Pilate's steps You know, I'm going now to the crucifixion time. I'm kind of fast-forwarding. We know how that Jesus performed so many miracles and things, but and now I'm fast-forwarding to the time when Jesus was there. He'd been kissed in the garden by Judas, and the soldiers had seized him and taken him. And he had had an unfair trial in the night without really any chance to defend himself. But God allowed it, and Jesus submitted himself. And when Jesus was standing there on the steps and the people were asked who they wanted, Barabbas or Jesus, why did they call out Barabbas? Why did they want Barabbas saved and Jesus crucified? It was that peer pressure of the government. The government. Our leaders have said, well, we saw when the blind man was healed, they said, cast him out and his parents. They'll cast us out of the tabernacle, out of the temple. They'll cast us out. That means we have no hope in God. In their mind, in their thinking, that's how they were processing it. From their past, how they had been taught. And yet, I'm sure there were some on the side that said, no, no, no. I don't know how many, but I do know this. There was so much peer pressure that Peter himself, who had been in the very inner circle with Jesus, had seen so much that whenever a little girl by the fire said, I think you're one of his followers, to Peter, what did Peter do? No, no, I don't know him. Why did he do that? Because he had more fear of the people than he did of God. And we can fault Peter on that, but I'm going to tell you, peer pressure is strong. Peer pressure is very strong. And at that time, Peter was looking at it from the angle that they'll crucify me too. They'll take me in too. And his flesh was pulling back. He did it, what, three times? Three times. And then when he heard that rooster crow, he went out and he did the right thing. He wept bitterly with remorse. He had forsaken his Lord. And like I said, we can fault him, but he knew after he did it, he had done wrong, and he did the right thing in repenting, because peer pressure is strong. And Peter was feeling that peer pressure. The soldiers were there with their spears. He had seen what they did to Jesus, and he was afraid. He was afraid for what? His own life. And what does the scripture say? He that loveth his own life shall lose it. Yeah. But Peter yet had to learn that, and we can follow from his example and know that there's more grace to come. And we find that Peter, on the day of Pentecost, if we turn a little farther in the Bible to Acts, in the second chapter, where Peter was bold and the Lord gave him utterance and he began to preach the gospel, he was sanctified by the Holy Spirit and he began to go on fire and tell about Jesus, and he did lose his life. The story is, tradition is, that he was crucified upside down because he said he wasn't worthy to die like Jesus. So Peter went ahead and fulfilled his mission. He learned the fear of God more than the fear of men. When he and John were that one time beaten by the leaders, and they said, don't speak about this man anymore. Remember what they said? It's better to obey God than to have fear of man. Right here, I believe it's in Acts. I hadn't written that down, but I've used it many times before. The 39th verse of Acts 5. But if it... No, wait, that's when... Sorry, I had that marked. Yeah, he said it's better to fear God than to fear... Okay, 20. It's Acts 3 and 20. For we cannot but speak the things which we have seen and heard. In the 19th verse, but Peter and John answered and said unto them, whether it be right in the sight of God to hearken unto you more than unto God, judge ye. For we cannot but speak the things which we have seen and heard. And so when they had further threatened them, they let them go, finding nothing how they might punish them because of the people. For all men glorified God for that which was done. You see, the leaders had a fear of people too. There's a fear of what others will do to us sometimes. And if we can focus on our love for God, our fear for God, our respect for God, that will help subside the fear of people. Because people around about us will influence us sometime to do wrong or to be silent or whatever it might be, and the Lord has maybe given us a nudge. I want you to witness for me, or I want you to do this. But Lord, what will the people think? You know, what will the people? No, don't fear people as much as you fear God. Fear God. And that's sometimes a hard thing to do. It is. It's a hard thing, but the Lord has challenged me on this. And like I said, when he gives me a message, he preaches it to me over and over. And I've said this to some others lately. I've kind of told them, we must fear God more than we fear what people will say about us. Because people today in our society, they're reversing good for evil. And they're going to speak evil of our goodness. Yes, they will. If you've not experienced it yet, you will. You can serve the Lord and you can do something that's right. That's some of my pressure last week. I did a lot of good things. And the good was spoken evil of and reversed. The woman has some issues and problems. She's elderly. But she reversed my goodness and spoke evil. I'm glad her daughter stood up for me. But what I'm saying is people will do that, and even in high places. They will reverse your good and make it look as bad. But if we have a fear of God in our hearts, the Lord will bless us. That's the key, to keep our fear and respect toward God so much that we will stay steadfast. And if somebody tells you, I've had this experience in my life, to lie and say I did do something when I didn't do it. Now, if you'll just say you did this, then you'll get out of the problem. But I didn't do it. Just say you did it. I didn't do it. You know, there's going to be peer pressure put on us like that. And it might mean money, whatever. The devil is sly, and he puts pressure upon us in different ways like that. And I'm not going to stand here and tell you I've always been perfect. It's pressure. But I've come back to the Lord and said, Lord, help me to stand firmer. Don't let me bend to peer pressure. Don't let me yield to the ways of the enemy where I forget you're the mighty God of all the universe, and you're the one I'm to be respecting. You're the one I'm to have fear of. And I think I just remembered a verse. Is it in John that says, fear the one that is able, that has control over heaven and hell? Is that in John, that can destroy you and both, and not fear those about you? Something like that. It might be in Luke or John. But the Lord wants us to have more fear and respect and reverence toward him and his commandments than the peer pressures of our society today. And believe me, they're going to get stronger and stronger. There's also a scripture that says, in the last days, evil will abound where men's hearts shall fail them. I believe that's in Matthew, the 25th chapter, where it says, evil shall abound so that our hearts will fail us. And I think we're getting close to that time where sometimes I just have to turn it off. There's so much. And yet the Lord says, fear me, respect me, keep my commandments. In these evil days that are around about you, I will take care of my own. It may not always be just the way we want it. We may have to eat manna. In other words, it may not always be the exact menu that we want, but the Lord will supply, and he will take care of us, and I found that to be true. I thank the Lord for his blessings to me, for how he's cared for us and watched over us. He's a present help in time of trouble, and he's to be loved and respected in every manner.